fact that all these, you know, different movements are happening within the Lower Mainland, within Burnaby, within Surrey, yep. North Vancouver. So I think it's really important to report on that, and I feel really grateful and fortunate that I get the opportunity to give that voice.
And what that means for you, the listener at home, is you're going to get more stories from CJSF about your community. And we would encourage you, if you have a story or an issue you want to be covered, give us a ring here at the station or reach out to our public affairs coordinator, Jesse Wentzloff at CJSFPA@sfu.ca, and make contact with us to help us tell a story you want to be heard. If you want to support more of this kind of journalism and this kind of programming on CJSF, I hope you'll go to our website, cjsf.ca/donate, to make a donation right now. If you want to do that from your phone, the easiest way to do it is just text donate to 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-CJSF. Text the word donate and you'll get that link to our donation page back by return text. Couldn't be easier. Make that donation. $35, $70, $90, maybe $120. You know, all that really helps support the work we do here at CJSF. You know, we don't get funded by the government, except through occasional grants, but nothing ongoing. We are dependent on fees that are mostly static, because here at SFU, the funding we get isn't adjusted for inflation. So, you know, we're working on the same amount of money we had in 2010. And you can imagine that that puts a bit of a squeeze on what we do. We're looking to FundDrive to help address that sort of shortfall, so to speak. I think we do great work with what we got, but, you know, if you can step up and support the station with a little contribution, that goes right into creating more great programming for you here at and on CJSF. I got one more clip I want to play you. This is from a recent interview we did with Leslie McBain from the group's Mom Stop the Harm. We talked to them twice this year. I also, earlier in the year, talked to Tracy Letts, who's the vice chair of Mom Stop the Harm. And in this clip, I'm talking to Leslie McBain, who's one of the co-founders of the organization. They were founded here in BC, and now they spread across Canada and throughout Western Canada, at least, are one of the main family-based advocacy organizations. They are made up, as the name implies a bit, family members of people living with addiction. And so they advocate on behalf of those folks, like their own family members, who are living with addiction every day, and what we need to do at a policy level to help those people and address the addiction crisis. Leslie McBain is a mom herself whose son passed away from addiction in 2016. That was part of what inspired her to help create this organization. Tracy Letts, who we talked to earlier in the year, lost her son just last January, not long before we spoke to her. So again, you know, we're trying to go as close to the ground as possible here at CJSF to give you an insight into some of these crises, some of these issues that we're living with here in the Lower Mainland. Here's this short clip with Leslie McBain. This is part of a conversation I had earlier this month, talking about the what was then the upcoming provincial election.
So one of the big policy moves recently has been around involuntary treatment. What is the reasons you are opposed to it? Because, you know, from I think what many people would see is that lots of folks out there don't seem to be in a position to make good choices for themselves through either through their addiction or circumstances or mental health. and maybe there needs to be some intervention. So why do you feel it's not a good policy?
Well, first of all, it's quite unclear exactly what either of the parties that are advocating for this kind of program. It's not clear what they mean. The devil's in the details in this. Mm-hmm. Coerced care, involuntary care for people who are addicted, let's just stick with that for the moment, has never proved to have great success. And that's not just here, but that is globally. Countries where coerced care has been implemented see that after a person comes out of that recovery type of facility are very vulnerable. The reasons for their drug use in the first place have not been attended to properly or on a long-term basis. And they come out and they generally, people want to go back to their old ways because they're not, well, certainly in the case of BC, if people do go into involuntary care and they come out drug-free, do they have a job? Do they have housing? Do they have support? Do they have ongoing treatment with counseling, for instance? No, they don't. And that's even with voluntary care. With involuntary care, people often, especially youth, I would have to add, come out mistrusting a system that would throw them into a locked facility and try and make them better without their consent. It just breeds mistrust in an already shaky system. So we're really against, and if I could just go on about a little bit about that.
And that was our clip with Leslie McBain from Mom Stop the Harm. All right, we are coming up to your section pretty soon there.
Okay, that's
Peter.
Cool. That's fantastic.
We're going to lighten the mood here a little bit.
Oh, are with, we?
Yes, we are. We're going to lighten the mood a little bit with some bird note.
Okay, it better be about something around this area, Magnus.
It's about peacocks. And although peacocks are not native to this area, we do have them around here.
Yes, okay. Well, I'll be the judge. We'll play the segment and I'll see what I have to say about it.
Okay. It's time for Gardening with Embark. Oh. What's going on? Sorry. We'll, this is acting up here quite a bit. Let's go.
This is Bird Note. A peacock's tail is magnificent. 4 or sometimes even 5 feet in length, when opened, it's an iridescent wonder, shimmering and covered in giant spots. And as it turns out, when it comes to that wonderful tail, there's even more than meets the eye. As this male Indian peafowl quivers his outstretched tail, it creates a rustling sound, almost like a drum roll. Scientists call this the peacock's train rattle. You might also call it the sound of peacock love. That train rattle is also causing a vibration in the air that we humans can't feel, but female peacocks, or peahens, can. That low-frequency rumble hits the sweet spot, also known as the resonant frequency of both the male's and female's crest feathers. They start to vibrate in unison. Peafowl also do a special wing shake, which seems to hit that same sweet spot. Scientists aren't quite sure how the train rattle love buzz fits into peacock mating behavior, but for the first time, we're starting to listen in. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Stanley Park, it used to have a peacock. I don't think they have them anymore.
I'm not sure. I know in Victoria at the Beacon Hill Park they have like a petting zoo, and they have a whole bunch of peacocks there that jump around and
I was there 7.5 years ago, so I saw them.
Yeah. And you hear their distinctive call. I'm not going to do it, although it's not hard to do. It's sort of, So we have peacocks.
Yeah, but they're transplanted.
So that's true.
It's a bit.
They are, I think, mostly from South Asia. Is their native habitat in North India.
Oh, actually, I'm going to add something that's actually local about birds. One thing about peacocks is all the colors.
Yeah.
Now, one of the dullest of birds is pigeons. However, if you look, and sometimes you have the opportunity, even though they want to fly away from you, look at their back.
Yeah.
The very back is two opposite colors, green and also purple.
Uh-huh.
And you see that the back of the actual pigeon's back.
Yeah.
And it's the only part that has a brilliant color to it. So that's a local thing. You can see this around town.
All right. Peter's bird note. Maybe we'll make that something we do regularly. Peter's bird note.
Well, actually, there's somebody I know who, one of the listeners to the show, our idea is to just have something on like bird note, but have it about all the animals and plants on the campus.
That would be cool.
Like the raccoons. We already have that woman does a music show called Raccoon City.
Yep.
Yeah.
And actually, there was a family of raccoons wanting to get into a building. Overweight was SFU garbage. It was a mother, father, and two children. I had to go back. I could have been attacked by them. No, they wanted to come into the building, one of the buildings.
Thank you for risking your well being to protect raccoons.
It was okay. It was, but I don't. But it would have been trouble if they came into the building. It would have, not the student union building, but another building.
Right. Yeah, the raccoons are kind of everywhere and quite bold up here.
Quite bold. Yeah.
All right. This is time for Gardening with Embark, another segment we bring you every week with the cooperation of the Embark Sustainability Society, one of our partners here in the building, at the Student Union building. So here is Gardening with Embark. It's time for Gardening with Embark. Welcome to the program, Pablo Vimas.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So Pablo Vimas is, of course, the gardens manager at Embark Sustainability here at the SFU campus in the Student Union building.
That's right.
And last week we talked about biodynamics. So we're sort of talking a bit about some of the philosophies or approaches to gardening. Last week we talked about biodynamics. What are we going to talk about this week?
So this week we're going to be looking into permaculture. Permaculture is another philosophy that we can use some of their ethics and principles in when we are gardening.
Mm-hmm.
So permaculture was developed in the mid-1970s. The intention was to reproduce what nature does in the forests and how a forest becomes a very self-sustainable environment. Can we that bring to an agricultural ecosystem where we as humans we cultivate and maintain? So Bill Mollison and David Holmgren, they came with a series of principles and ethics that having after that work they did, they came up with those principles, and those principles have been the base for further work, future work. And nowadays, 50 years later, that those principles have moved from the agricultural environment into the society. So every time that we are building new buildings, or when we are establishing a new community, like here in university, close to Burnaby campus, all those principles are being applied and used. Yeah.
So what does that mean for the home gardener?
Yeah. For the home gardener is that we, besides, so we will move into an organic garden, but as well we can use some of these principles. So one of the ethics, there are three ethics. One of the ethics is called earth care.
Yeah.
So cultivating the soil, making the soil. Soil is a living organism, so adding organic matter, making it more lively, more fungi, insect, invertebrates, and bacteria growing in there, as well the forests and the waters. So all compile that. Yep. As well, we have people care, not only ourselves, but through the cultivating the land, we care for the people, and the other is fair share, which now is very much so. Care for the land, people care, and fair share is, you can hear everywhere when you talk about sustainability. And then we have other principles that are using when we are designing and gardening.
Right.
So one of the principles
is... So just before you get into that, I just wanted to clarify what you mean by fair share.
Oh, fair share is that we set limits on consumption.
Okay.
So we don't... so each habitat had a maximum capacity.
Yep.
So we don't go over that. Yeah.
Okay.
So that is. So we make sure that what in sustainability terms says we also think for future generations. So that is that don't oversaturate, overexploit your environment.
Yeah.
So we as a gardeners, if we want to use these principles of permaculture, one of the principles is, for instance, composting. There is no waste in the garden. So one byproduct of harvesting, there are leaves that we cannot eat or they are not edible anymore, but there's no waste, there's no garbage that goes to the composter, which becomes the food and energy for all the bacteria and fungi and invertebrates living in the compost. Then the other is rain barrels. Well, everybody said, oh, with the rain last week we had, we could have filled so many rain barrels. That is part of the principle, catch and store energy.
Yeah.
So now we have the solar energy, wind energy. So all you can see this principle like a catch and store energy. And not only with renewable energy, but as well how we store our food. So pickling, canning, drying, smoking, it's all that is part of our... So all these principles that they, when they were starting permaculture, they were using all how society been doing pre-industrial times and how nature is doing. So I tried to combine those two, and they came with these great principles that, yeah, sometimes we just talk or think that people is doing, but... we don't realize that it comes from this permacultural work. So that's... Then we have I think there's insulation as well.
Yeah.
How to insulate your home. So all those principles slowly is moving into the real everyday life now. And finally, permaculture is not only for the farm, for a society, as a community, but as well as an individual.
Yeah, because of course one of the things we have to consider is that farming and to some extent gardening, as wonderful it is and it produces so much food, can also put a great deal of stress on the environment, both locally in terms of, you know, the sustainability of soils, but also, you know, broader. And so incorporating these principles, you know, is actually quite important, because, you know, the ability to grow food and keep farmland and growing spaces healthy is a long-term project, not something that you can think of, what can I get, what can I max out on my on my plot of land this year?
Correct. So one of the things that we have now is when we start our seeds indoors for the next spring, we will go with substrates that are peat moss free. So, you know, peat moss is just organic matter collected over these years, and it doesn't decompose very easy. So, and we extract, we mine that. So now we are like, oh, can we stop using peat moss? Let's use something renewable, like a coconut husk that is from the agricultural byproduct. Yeah, so it's, and then if we go a bit more deep on a personal level, like I say, oh, wow, what I need to update my electronics each month.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, why I need it. It still is working. So it's, again, why I have to fair share, why I have to make sure all the exploitation that happens in order to renew the product that you are doing each 6 months.
Yeah, and if something maybe stops working, maybe try and fix it rather than just throw it out and buy a new one.
Correct, yes.
Because a lot of energy goes into manufacturing all this stuff. Well, that's really great. Thanks for sharing that with us today. How do people find out more about Embark?
Embark Sustainability is based in SFU Burnaby campus, and you can find us on our website, embarksustainability.org, or through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with one more segment.
That's right. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Hi there, it is Pablo Vimas, a gardening manager for Embark Sustainability. Just a huge call to our radio listeners about the CJSF fund drive. Go online to our website and do a donation. You can reach us at cjsf.ca/donate.
And thanks to Pablo for bringing us, working with us on Gardening with Embark, bringing that to you every week. Regular segment on sustainable gardening in our region. And I think it, I know I've learned a lot every week listening and talking to Pablo, and hopefully you found that interesting too. I know there's many gardeners out there, and if you like this kind of content, or you just like CJSF, or you're excited about all the reporting Danny's going to be doing in the coming in the coming months, head to our website, cjsffunddrive.ca. Learn more about the station and our fund drive, and you can make a donation there. Or if you want to get the donation link, text it back to you to make it as easy as possible. Text DONATE to 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-2573. It's really important that you support the station. We are here for you every day throughout the year. And we're asking you this 1 week of the year to step up and support the station with a donation, $35, $70. Maybe you're feeling particularly generous, $250. That would be amazing. And if you're thinking, keep thinking about it. The fund drive goes on all week until next Sunday. There are many shows you can make a donation to. When you go to the donation page, you can select the particular program you want to support, and then put in your information and your donation, and boom, all done. Couldn't be easier. Peter.
Okay, anyway, so you heard about the Disneyland, Disney World, and all this.
Yeah.
So it would be great if when you donated money, you got to go to Disneyland or something, right?
That would be amazing.
But I got something even better. It's Haskell Land. I go by Peter R.H. I'm Peter Raymond Haskell is my name. So it's got two L's at the end. So you get tickets to Haskell Land if you donate. And I got some tickets here that I'll leave the station. Now, you might say, well, how am I going to get something like Disneyland? So I have to borrow a few things around town. And so I made this. I've had this for a number of years. In fact, I made a variation in 1989. And one thing, in 1984, I saw a documentary about the 1939-1940 New York World's Fair. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of interesting, because hopefully they still have the old Life magazines at the main library. Yeah. And so I was sort of looking at it. So what I did was I sort of had the things that sort of was still lasting, that sort of had that aura of it, because the technocrats were around. So I did a Haskell Land then, but the technocrats are no longer even in Canada now; they're in Tennessee. But then I have I have this thing. I have seven spots, and you get the little pamphlet, which I'm going to leave. I had a chicken dinner, but I cleaned this out. So you get the plastic.
Does that make it more appealing that it's in a?
No, it makes it less appealing, but I'm not on a big budget.
Responsibly recycled chicken dinner.
Yes, container. Well, that makes it progressive, you see.
Okay. Awesome.
So I have used, according to the 1975 International Copyright Act, because you can use a bit of artwork from other sources.
Yeah.
So I got a 1941 Flash Gordon panels. And one of them on the cover is of a rocket. Well, you can see a sculpture like that at the southwest corner of the Canby Street Bridge. And it sort of has that. It used to be at the airport from 1936 to 1973. And for X-86, it was scrapped, so they had to do it again. And if you go there, you can see it was a sheet metal union. They'd say they did this for X-86, the 100th anniversary of Vancouver. But
so
I
know that one. So yes. What, it used to be at the airport as a sculpture at the airport.
Well, not that physical.
No, but
one.
They got rid of it.
Yeah.
And then for X-86, they recreated it.
Yes. And then after X-86, they put it over in the south.
Right.
Cause it's southwest corner.
Yeah, because it's there with a 100 symbol because it was the 100th birthday of the city of Vancouver.
That's right.
1886, 1986.
Now, the other thing I have is from it's an actual mural. Now, the 1939 New York Rose Fair, whose theme was the world of tomorrow, by the way, they would have these murals everywhere, kind of symbolic. A bit cubist or futurist in style, cubist. But we got one at Dunsmuir and Granville at the northeast corner. You got to go into the Shoppers Drug Mart because that used to be a bank. And when it opened up in 1958, Imperial Bank of Commerce, they had a mural, which they saved, even though it's a Shoppers Drug Mart, of the economy in British Columbia. So you can even, if you can put BC Binning, you can even, when you see it, they'll show you what it's symbolic of. They got hydropower, they got shipping and seaport industry, fruit growing, but you'll see it. And you can, on your tablet if you got one. But, and then I got a substation. The one directly north of the Georgia Viaduct, one block west of Main Street. Because that's sort of kind of, I mean, people take it for granted, but that's kind of advanced technology.
Yeah.
There's a bigger one here in Burnaby that's across from Ho Ho's restaurant. But I got to put all the stuff together so you can see it in one day, right?
Right.
So I got four architectural structures. The original British Columbia Provincial Courthouse, which is the art gallery, which you want to leave, but that's built 1911. Now that's a neoclassical style, but the Marine Building, Hastings and Burrard, northwest corner, 1930 Art Deco, the old BC Hydro Building, Burrard and Nelson. Built 1957. I guess that's more of an international style.
Yeah.
So, and then I got the Arthur Erickson Law Courts built 1980 between Hornby and Howe and Nelson and Robson. Completely done by him. He co-did it here at SFU. But anyway, you can get the pamphlets here if you... Or if you heard the show, because I don't know. Some people say nobody hears me. Everybody... Not everybody I know even hears the show here. So either if you donated or if you heard me today, you can get one at the station. I got the recycled plastic.
Awesome. So if you make a donation to this program, Speak Up on Monday, you could get the special Haskell Land pamphlet and its tour of the Seven Wonders. Or is it Eight Wonders?
It's seven. Let's just say it's pretty good. You don't have
the seven pretty good things in Vancouver.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's stuff in Burnaby too, but I don't have anything in Burnaby on that one. But anyway,
yeah. All right. It is. That pretty much brings us to the end of our program for today. Speak Up. We'll be back tomorrow, and if we have some news for you, we'll jump on there and talk a bit about the final resolution of the election. Be interesting to see how quickly, once they announce those final numbers, how quickly things start moving in terms of towards a government and who the presumed minority government is going to work with and how and all that stuff. So, and again, like I say, the speaker this whole issue needs to be resolved. So lots more story there yet before we finally just get back to the boring old task of governing. Thanks for joining me today, Danny.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be here.
Look for more stories from Danny in the coming months. Thanks, Peter.
Yes.
And for Peter's and for Haskell Land.
Yes.
Very exciting. Democracy Now! Is up in a few minutes. Don't forget, we have the best time for Democracy Now! In the whole region. That's worth supporting. CJSF